So today we're reading from the fourth canto, and the topic is about fault finding and how dangerous it is and what we can do about that. So today's verse is from the story of Sati, Lord Shiva, and Daksha. Is anybody here who doesn't know that story? Everybody familiar with what happened?
I'm not sure if I know it or not.
Not sure, okay. So I'll just go over it briefly, just to kind of give a context to this verse. So there was this big festival in the heavenly planets, like a cosmic event. And Daksha, who's the father of Sati, he was having a fire yajna, and he invited all the demigods and all the dignitaries of the universes. And of course, Sati naturally wanted to join in and be part of that event. So she talked to her husband, but there was some conflict between her husband and her husband's father-in-law, her father, right? So there was this tension between them. There was actually some envy on Daksha's part. He was envious of Lord Shiva. So he was actually discouraging her. He said, if you go, it's probably not going to turn out well. And he advised her against it, but she was just really eager to go and visit her family, her sisters, her mother. It's the normal social event. And she went anyway, even though he advised her not to go. So she went. And all of, it's kind of a touching scene, like a picture of her. She kind of stormed off. She was like, I want to go. So she stormed off. And all of Shiva's associates thought, okay, we can't let her go alone, so they all went and flocked around her like to support her. So she had this huge troop when she went and arrived. And then when she got there, just to be very brief, she wasn't treated well by her father. Her father basically ignored her. And her mother and sisters were friendly. But she was dissed by her father. And then am I mixing up these two parts? Because there's a... Anyway, the other part before that is that Shiva was blasphemed, so that's kind of the background. That's why he didn't go. He had already been blasphemed by Daksha. So then at this point, when Sati was there, again, Daksha spoke badly about Lord Shiva. And this is her response to his criticism of Lord Shiva. So now we're going to read one of those verses. And the topic is on fault finding. So we're going to try to see how we can make this relevant to our lives, this topic of fault finding.
Doshan Paresham Higunesh Sadhavo.
Doshan Paresham Higunesh Sadhavo.
Rinanti Kechin Abhavadrisho Vija.
Twice born Daksha, a man like you can simply find fault in the qualities of others. Lord Shiva, however, not only finds no fault with others' qualities, but if someone has a little good quality, he magnifies it greatly. Unfortunately, you have found fault with such a great soul. So it's interesting, sometimes when we're, at least when I'm seeing these Sanskrit verses, I forget the meaning, and so it just sounds like, you know, a really sweet poetry, and we're singing it kind of cheerfully. But can you imagine how angry she must have been to have her husband being offended by her own father? She's still speaking very politely, but there must have been so much anger and pain in her heart when she's saying this. So she's basically defending a great devotee. So Om Gyan Timyalasya Gyan Anjanashwaya Chakshuram Nityamina Tasma Shivari Namaha. So we're going to go through three basic areas in this class. The first thing we're going to discuss is the positive side. So if we're not
wanting to find fault. What are we aiming for? What is our goal? What is the positive outcome that we're looking for? And then what are the negatives? What happens when we do find fault? What happens to our spiritual lives? And then the last thing is some techniques. And there's an endless variety for discussion on techniques on how to get over fault finding. So the first thing that's important for us to remember is how valuable devotee association is. That's the very basic foundation of our spiritual life, this community of devotees and the friendships that we have with each other. It's like the fabric that holds together society, our society. There are different keys that we hear about for our spiritual progress, and for example, chanting the holy names is a key. And another key would be, give me an example, what would be another key for spiritual progress?
Following the principles.
Following the principles, okay, another one?
Serving the Vaishnavas.
Serving the Vaishnavas.
Reading.
Sorry?
Reading.
Okay.
Eating prasadam.
Eating prasadam, okay, yeah. We need to keep our soul in our body, so we need to eat prasadam. So there are five that Rupa Goswami mentions, and this association of devotees is a big key. It's invaluable, and we can't make progress without it. So let's just look at this great treasure that we have. We've gotten the association of devotees, and we need to qualify the association of devotees. It's not that we're just, oh, here we have association of devotees. What does it mean to have the association of devotees in the proper mood? One of the things that makes anything effective, for example, for chanting japa, what's the key to making it effective? What do we have to do with our mind in order for us to be with the japa and...
Being attentive.
Being attentive, right? If we're doing anything in life and we want to be effective in that area, we have to apply attention and consciousness and presentness. So similarly, our objective with association of devotees is attentive association. And that means that we're doing it with our consciousness, we're doing it with our affection and our presentness. We're trying to be very aware of what our dealings are like. Actually, whether we find fault or not is, or how, let's say, how we apply devotee association in our lives is the key from going from non-steady devotional service to steady devotional service. And if you look at Lord Chaitanya's 8 verses, Shikshashika verses, there's the one that Trinada P. Sunichena verse, the one that talks about humility. And Lord Chaitanya also mentions tolerance, how we should be tolerant in our interactions with others, meaning that we don't, you know, unnecessarily offend or act towards others in a way that's going to be detrimental towards them. And that verse in the middle of Shikshashtaka is considered the verse that goes from the basic preliminary stages of bhakti to the steady. So after that verse becomes, now we're hitting the steady stage of bhakti, the nishta. So it's very important for our spiritual progress how we interact with the devotees. And not just devotees, not just ISKCON devotees, but all living entities. How we interact with them is going to determine our rate of spiritual progress. Have you ever heard the quote from, or the saying that the driving department has, people who are learning how to drive, they tell you that driving is not a right, it's a privilege. And so I was thinking about that quote, and it's actually very relevant to our association with devotees. It's not a right that we have, oh, here I am, I got, you know, just taking it for granted, I have this right to be in the association. Actually, it's a privilege that can be taken away depending on how we use it. Just as our driving can be taken away if we don't do it properly, or other things that we take for granted in our society, like our rights. We consider our rights, but they can be taken away. So similarly, the devotee association can be taken away from us. And just imagine how our lives would be without that. How empty and lonely we would be in a world without devotees. I've mentioned this before, but I do this as a technique to remind myself of how important it is for me to be in the association, is just picturing myself in this huge city where everything is slightly impersonal, and there's just billboards and people walking by and buses and trains, and I'm just standing there in the middle, and there's not a single devotee around me. And I do that just to remind myself of how empty my life would be without the association of those that love hearing about Krishna and that can talk about Krishna. So we're going towards this direction of a spiritual environment, a spiritual world, basically. That's our goal, is heading towards this a world where people are constantly wanting to uplift others and wanting to bring them towards Krishna. It's a world of people who are free of this tendency to find fault. And you could say, oh, that's our goal, long-term goal, but actually it's our goal here on this planet too, is to create that environment, that spiritual world, where we treat each other like that. And as soon as devotees treat each other in that mood, that is the spiritual world. There is no difference. So there's the Sanskrit word for aversion to fault-finding is found in the Bhagavad Gita, and the Sanskrit word is apaishunam. So this is discussed in chapter 16, the very first verse, when Krishna goes over the qualities of a devotee. Apaishunam. Can everybody say that? Apaishunam. That means aversion to fault-finding. Apaishunam. So imagine a world full of people who are averse to fault-finding. How wonderful that would be. How pleasant it would be. How do you feel when you're with somebody who you know is free of that tendency to criticize? I'm asking anybody here, how do you feel when you're around somebody like that?
Yes. Secure. Peaceful.
Peaceful, secure.
Encouraged.
Encouraged.
Comfortable.
Comfortable.
Yeah. Like,
you want to be like them? Yeah. So we automatically, when we're in the association of people like that, at least myself, I kind of relax and I feel like, oh, okay, I can be myself and it's okay. They're going to encourage me and help me in my spiritual life, but I don't have to be guarded that somehow I'm going to be the victim of criticism, unnecessary criticism. So this world of people who are averse to fault-finding is the spiritual world where everybody's encouraging. So most of us, because we're in this material world, the material world itself is a place of difficulty in this particular area. Most people are trying to put themselves on top, and by doing that, pushing others down. So this system of, hey, I'm going to go first, and by doing that, I'm going to make other people feel bad. That's the description of this material world, and that's the world we're in. So we have a situation where fault-finding does happen. So now let's look at fault-finding and what its effects are. So in this, what are the reasons that people find fault? Let's explore that a little. It seems to be that there is a positive way to do fault-finding too, right? We expect this of people who are our guides. We expect some critique and for our development, for our improvement. We hope that they're going to tell us, you know, these are areas in which you can work and strengthen. So there's a difference between that kind of discrimination, which is healthy and which is helping us improve, and then the kind that stems from this envy. So sometimes, have you ever noticed that something will bother you about somebody or something they're doing? Like little things, it could be something, and you wouldn't tell people this because it's embarrassing, you know? Like something's bothering you, like the way someone, I don't know, dances in kirtan or something. Have you ever analyzed why is it bothering you? Have you ever gone deeper and thought about it? And it really comes down to envy. There's this tendency to want to not have that person enjoy in a certain way. Or how come they can come in late for Mangala Arati, but I can't? So there's that, so then, oh, they're late, look at them, you know? And there's that underlying envy, really, it comes down to that, it's pretty shocking. We always give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, too. What's ironic is that we expect others to understand where we're coming from and give us the benefit of the doubt. But we so easily don't do that for others. We try to put them on the same, put them on a high, you know, here, you need to stay here and be at this level, otherwise I'm going to criticize you. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has this 8 different stages. It's like a spectrum. We often think, okay, full appreciation or fault-finding, kind of black and white, but there's this spectrum that he outlays. The 8 perspectives on others. We'll just quickly go down here in the 3rd column. So there's a Sanskrit word, asadu, and it goes from the most negative approach to the most positive. And how, and we can look at this spectrum and see, okay, where do I fall in on the spectrum? So first is seeing others realistically, but is suspicious of the validity of the good qualities. So the example is, this person is being nice to me, but he must have some agenda. Is he trying to cheat me? So that's that one. Then the next one is seeing others realistically, but overlooking the good and accepts only the bad. Then magnifying the bad and doesn't see any good at all. So it's actually, this is not, sorry, this is going from least bad to the worst. The spectrum is not, I thought it was going from the worst to the better. But you can see it's actually getting more crude here, going from crude to the worst. So making the bad qualities worse and transforming the good into bad.
Okay.
And then we have the noble ones. So then we have seeing others realistically but focusing on the good, then focusing, accepting only the good, and then increasing the good qualities in others and not seeing the bad, and then making the good qualities better and transforming the bad into good. So we can make this available to you if you want to just study this more. It's really a good meditation to find out, what am I doing and where do I fit along the scale? It was described that Lord Shiva was actually, he was doing the last one. He was making the good qualities of others better. That's what he was doing. He was focusing on fanning that spark, encouraging the heck out of people, like Vaisheshika Prabhu likes to say. I love that, just encourage the heck out of people. So that was what Lord Shiva was doing. Let's just look at quickly what happens when a person is a fault finder. What happens in the heart of somebody who's constantly fault finding? Have you noticed, let me talk personally. I've noticed that when I have this tendency in my mind to look at others' lives and just in a negative way, that it immediately affects my quality of chanting, immediately. And I might not notice the connection right away, but if I go back into the recent past, and then in the past couple of hours or whatever, I think, oh wow, I was thinking negatively towards someone, and now I don't have much taste. Like something happened to the taste, the attraction to the chanting. It's like we have these glasses. We have a glass, and it's our spiritual life, a cup. And we can, in the association of devotees, we can fill it with this amazing beverage. Just think of your favorite beverage. And we're filling it with our spiritual association. But as soon as this fault-finding tendency comes in the heart, it's like we're taking that cup, and we're pouring ink into it. And it's becoming totally... it's ruining what we've been getting in the association devotees, and they can't go together. They're just not compatible at all. You wouldn't want to drink a beverage that had ink in it. So that was something I thought of as an analogy for what's happening in our hearts. We're chanting and we're praying that our hearts be cleansed, but meanwhile, if we have that tendency to criticize, we're actually just making our heart dirty and being very counterproductive. Another thing that happens is that the only way that we can cut Krishna's mercy off from our life, he's constantly giving us mercy. But if we offend his devotees, it's like creating a short circuit. So we're having this channel of mercy coming towards us. And we choose by our actions, like, okay, I'm going to offend this devotee. We're choosing to divert that mercy away from us for the time being. Because Krishna's not going to open his mercy towards us when we're offending his devotees. So it's a very serious thing to consider. So now let's go from the detrimental aspects of criticism to what we can do. What can we proactively do to help ourselves? So there's many answers to this, and if we have time, I'll ask for some of your feedback. One thing that we can do is, like I was saying earlier, encourage the heck out of people. It means really focusing on appreciating those devotees around us. Finding something in each devotee, if not one thing, if not many things, at least one, right? So what can you find in that devotee that inspires you, that can help you in your spiritual life? Sometimes I do this other technique where I, just to help me in this way, I picture my life, my spiritual journey, as a jigsaw puzzle, because I like jigsaw puzzles, and each devotee that has touched me and has inspired me as a very important piece in that puzzle, and that the conclusion or the culmination of my spiritual journey wouldn't happen unless each of those devotees was there, just to really sink into my mind how important and valuable those devotees are and what they're contributing to me by their amazing qualities. And then another thing that we have to do is be very honest in our self-reflection. This is a tricky one. For myself, I find that it's easier to just glaze over and not go deep inside, but to ask ourselves the question. This is the bee versus the fly question. Am I being a bee or a fly in this situation? Just to give you a little clearer understanding, Prabhupada said this in Mayapur in a lecture, 1976. He said, the flies, they are finding out where is the sore, and the bees, sore, S-O-R-E, the wound. And the bees, they are finding out where is the honey. Two classes, fault-finding and collecting the good things. Similarly, there are many rascals who are simply fault-finding. Blasphemy means you have good qualities, but still I am defaming you. The saintly person tends to overlook the bad qualities and see the good ones. So we can ask ourselves, I just had this interaction with this devotee. Was I doing it in the mood of a fly or in the mood of a bee? It's kind of a simple analysis. You know the story of Ramachandra Puri? Ramachandra Puri and Lord Chaitanya. He was a person who would constantly focus on Lord Chaitanya's eating habits, and he was really obsessed with it. If Lord Chaitanya was eating less, he would go, oh, he would criticize that, and if Lord Chaitanya was eating more, he would criticize that. And no matter what Lord Chaitanya did, he was just on an agenda, and he wanted to blaspheme Lord Chaitanya's eating habits. So I think of that story, and I ask myself, am I being like Ramachandra Puri? Am I being somebody who's focusing on one negative quality in a person rather than seeing all of their good, you know? And then, for appreciation, and then self-reflection, and then another thing is to be aware of the variety within association devotees, and to be okay with that. That we're not an impersonal bubble, but there's going to be different people with different personality types. And this is why some devotees, they have workshops on personality types and how to get to know them, just so that we can help our own minds understand different people and where they're coming from. Because like we said earlier, we have this tendency to think that somebody's going to think in the same way we are, and then how come they're not, you know? But if we understand the variety of persons, and we're okay with that, then we can be much more accepting. And then what's really funny is Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that we shouldn't try to change our nature, that we should actually do things according to our nature and not be somebody else. But then why is it that we want other people to change their natures? We should ask ourselves that question. So I need to do what I've been given with this nature for Krishna, and other people need to do what they can from their natures. And if I'm wanting to take on someone else's nature, if I'm wanting to change mine and be somebody else's, that's also a symptom of envy. that somehow they have a nature that I wish I had, and I want to become them, right? So this envy is what actually creates rebirth, really. Because if we want to be somebody else's nature, then Krishna will facilitate us by giving us another birth to experience that. So we have to learn to appreciate how other people's natures can be positive. We have to see them in a positive light. Even what we think might be a negative quality, we can train our brains to think, okay, how could that be a good quality? How can that be used in Krishna's service? And for example, if someone says that person's really picky, they're just so picky in everything they do, you could change that terminology to make it a positive thing and say, okay, that person's very particular, very sure about what they want. So we can take these negative things and just make them a positive. So, yeah, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy your video.